Hello, this is Meet the Writers. My guest today is credited with inventing avocado toast. He's an Australian restaurateur and food writer, loved by family cooks and sophisticated foodies alike. His sunny, relaxed approach to food is an essential element in his enduring popularity. His books have sold over 1 million copies all over the world. And his latest publication, Australian Food, is also set to be a bestseller. Join us as he cooks me breakfast. Bill Granger, welcome to Meet the Writers.
Oh, thank you, Georgina.
In fact, it's you who should be welcoming me because I am in your beautiful kitchen. So this is a fantastic kitchen. We've got an array of pans, this huge, is it a gas stove?
Yes, yeah, definitely a gas stove. Electric oven, but a gas stove.
And it's a really, really beautiful house. And here you are in your apron.
In my apron, always in my pinny.
And you're going to cook for me.
I am. I thought I'm always... I think now I can cook quite well after many, many years. I need to shop and see what's around. I find it really hard to think of a recipe now and go and buy the ingredients and come and do it home, which is ironic considering that's what I do for a living, or one part of what I do. But I thought I'd go back to the classics, but give a little bit of an autumn seasonal twist to it.
Fantastic. And that's because, of course, you have a new book out and it's called Australian Food.
Yes.
And it's really trying to import the sunshine of Australia into all of the recipes.
Absolutely. And Australian food, you know, I'm often asked, what is Australian food? And the thing is, it changes. I don't think any of us can really say yet. It's too young cuisine, a country, or it's an old country, but the modern food culture is quite new. And I think it's the attitude, it's the casualness, it's the lack of fuss and pretense. Australians, we're an egalitarian bunch, and we don't carry the baggage, I think, that a lot of people around the world, in Europe or, you know, about the elitism of eating well. In Australia, you expect to eat well. Everyone does. You know, it's a land of the 5 o'clock barbecue. And there's not that thing of, oh, this is special or it's fancy. We don't have that. We're very, very casual. We're much more Asian that way.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your early years, because you were born in Melbourne, but I understand your mum is vegetarian.
Yes, mum is all vegan now, I think totally vegan. And my father was a butcher. They're separated now, so I'm surprised it took them so long. But I think it's interesting, that idea about the way we define ourselves with what we eat. Recently, my girls now really don't want to eat much meat at all, and it's environmental. It's quite different, and they're forcing me to reassess the way I cook, I think. I think for many years, and especially cooking for the family and even writing a menu, was always around the base protein. So, you know, whether it's steak or pork chop or a bit of fish, that was the way I built a meal. And then I got the veggies on the side and everything was the side. Now, changing the way I think and thinking of the vegetables first and then having the meat almost as a side or as an add-on for a little bit of protein or a little bit of taste, and, you know, it's quite Japanese in a way, is much more the way I cook now.
And so growing up, did you eat vegetarian food mostly?
No, my mother didn't cook. She was part of a generation that, you know, I think cooking was tied up with an identity about being stuck in the home and not having an independent life. And I think her generation, she was a post-war baby, a baby boomer, probably really rejected cooking, or a certain sort of woman did. It was about being stuck to the home, not being able to work, all of those things. And I think it was almost my generation who, and also as a man, who took up on the idea that cooking actually can be pleasurable and fun. And it's not just about being domestic. It's not something that's forced on you. It's something you can do for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. So how did you start?
How did I start? I liked cooking growing up. I think even I've noticed with my own girls, I think you either like it or you don't. You either, you know, there's different ways people cook. They cook for pleasure, or they cook for need, or they cook to make people happy. And, you know, I do all three. And I just loved it. I loved cooking for my family because mum didn't really cook. And I enjoyed making meals and, you know, typical boy using lots of pans and, you know, making a big mess and trying to show off. And I just enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the science of it, the what you get at the end, the fact that you, you know, put a few things together and you got something that was a surprise. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't think I'd do it for a career at all. I went to architecture school. I started in architecture and design. I thought that's what I wanted to do. When I started it, it was 6 months into it. I thought, no, it's too structured for me. It wasn't the way my brain worked. So I swapped to art school, and that suited me much more. But during art school, I worked in a restaurant part-time and I loved it. You know, working in studios, in art school, it's not very collaborative. You're working by yourself. It's solitary. And for me, working with people and having something that was instant and then finished every day really suited my personality. And I think, you know, most people work in hospitality. It's a family. You work as a group of people. And that was, yeah, that got me out of bed every morning.
And then came bills.
Bills, yes. When I think about it now, it's a long time ago, nearly 28 years ago. I was 23. And I can't believe I did it, really, when I think now. People said, how do you do it? I thought, well, I don't think I thought. I think because Dad was a shopkeeper. He had a few butcher shops. My grandfather had a chain of butcher shops. So I think that idea of working for myself was definitely something I carried. I think, you know, your parents do influence what you do. You can either do something similar or completely the opposite. And while I wasn't interested in having a meat shop, the idea of a cafe was my shop. So my grandfather had set up some life insurance policies for all his children that meant we could borrow a bit of money to start our own business at 21, which was a great thing because access to capital, as everyone knows, is the hardest impediment for anyone starting a business, you know, whether it's in London, Australia, in the developing world, anywhere, it's hard. And that was a great head start. It was $20,000 Australian, and that helped me start. And I just opened up a little cafe. I missed out on three. No one would rent me a site because I was so young. You know, I don't think I'd let my shop that I'd bought to a 21, 22-year-old. But I finally got the shop and could only open breakfast and lunch. So there was no strategy in it. And I thought, okay, we'll do it. And there was no bookings because I'd never worked in a proper restaurant. I didn't know how to take bookings. There was no credit cards because I didn't know how to set a credit card machine up. It was cash only. Breakfast and lunch from 7 to 3, Monday to Saturday, because that was the hours I was allowed to open. And it worked. I don't know why. It just hit a moment. I remember someone saying in the early days, I love coming in here. It's like a cocktail party at 8 a.m. And I thought that was really interesting because it's like that buzz. You'd see people, you know, in those early days was all local. And it's really fun. People saw the people they knew. They caught up. They chatted. They had a coffee and they made friendships over the big communal table, which happened because we weren't allowed to have many seats in this. So I had to fill it somehow, not have an empty restaurant. So that just took off. And I think that was the breakfast culture. And it wasn't really trying to start something. I didn't think I'm going to make breakfast big. I just did it because I thought, okay, I've got this site and I've got to try and make some money. I thought lunch would be busy. I thought we'd do some decent coffee. I was from Melbourne, so I was used to good coffee. And breakfast became this enormous thing.
And you became Mr. Avocado Toast.
Yes. That took 23 years to come. Bizarrely, a few years ago, I started to get phone calls from all the big American journals, you know, the Washington Post, New York Times, saying, we've heard you invented avocado toast. Can you tell us about it? I was like, what? We've traced it back to you. And I say, oh, really? And I think it was the idea in the early 90s. It was a great time in lots of ways, because if you're interested in design or food, it was a really important moment. There were not really many design restaurants. You know, you'd have Terence Conran starting to do a few. There was a couple of fancier ones where star interior designers would do an interior, or architects would do a restaurant. And it was that idea of, I wanted to do a cafe that was beautiful because of my interest in architecture and design, but also the food was fresh. It wasn't just it's a couple of Italian cafes, but they're more like a bar Italia, you know, a toasted sandwich or panini. And I wanted to do fresh food. I've always just liked fresh ingredients put on a plate. And because I had never worked in a restaurant properly, I didn't know how to batch make recipes. I cooked like I would in a home, as a home cook, you know, not getting anything ready really, just starting to cook what I felt like that day. And that's how it started.
So you are going to cook for me, and I'm very excited.
I didn't know what I was going to cook until a while ago, until I went to the shop. And of course I've come back to the most popular things, because what I found was this, a beautiful truffle, a black truffle.
Wow.
They didn't have a
wawa.
Yeah, it smells incredible, doesn't it?
Oh, really?
And I thought, I saw that and I thought, it's that time of year. What I do love about being in the Northern Hemisphere at this time of year is autumn food. I think there's something very special when we go from that crunch, and I love summer. I mean, summer is my ultimate, where you don't even cook, you just chop things. But in autumn, flavors and vegetables and everything's just a bit tougher and chewy. You just need to let things down a bit just to soften them. I'm not ready for big hearty winter food, but I just like the way it all softens, and the colors are beautiful, you know, from the flowers. And I love flowers, have been always a huge part of what I do. And I love, in the UK, there's a much more strong movement now to seasonal flowers, not just buying flowers that, you know, come from the markets, you know, hothouse grown flowers. So everything gets softer and harder. So I'm just going to do scrambled eggs to start with truffle. So that's pretty simple. The scrambled eggs, there was the New York Times that wrote about them. We had a great journalist that was in Australia covering, there was a big economic, World Economic Forum. And he's a political journalist, but he loved food. His sideline was writing about food, and his name was Johnny Apple. And he was a great political journalist, but he used to come in with his wife, Betsy, Johnny and Betsy, and they'd come in and have breakfast. And he loved it, and he fell in love with the scrambled eggs. I had no idea, I'm young, I didn't know they were special. I just made them because a girl I worked with, Michelle, had worked in a place where they put a bit of cream in it and said, okay, that's a good idea. And I just started making them. But of course, I like to make things quickly. I think I do have a bit of that sort of boyish thing of not wanting to measure too much. I don't like to be too precise. And she just let me get on with cooking the front. She was meant to be the head chef. And she used to do the I didn't know it at the time, but she put me on breakfast, which was a long server for 5 hours. She'd go into prep and then she'd serve lunch and I'd go in and make the sandwiches. So it was the lowly job in the kitchen, but it just came through and I've got some cream. Ah, there we are. So 4 eggs. This is for 2 servers. And a good dollop of cream, about 100 mils. That's good. Yeah, a little bit more, it doesn't matter. What you're making is a custard. And I always, you know, with ingredients and, you know, I'm old enough now that I've lived through every diet trend in the world. And I now know that diet is the most, no one really knows what different foods do. There's contradictory advice. It's really fascinating. And we still don't know. Something's very basic. It's about what most food does to us. You know, whether it's high protein, low carb, low fat, high fat. It's all so different. So now, after trying many and having no success with anything, the only success is walking an hour a day and, you know, having a reasonable portion size. Or if you have a big meal, don't have as much. So I don't worry about the cream. I used to be embarrassed that there was cream in there for a while, I think in the low-fat days, but then it was fine in the Atkins days. So it's gone through. It's been in and out of fashion.
What about the 5-2? Do you fast at all?
I've tried the 5-2. It didn't work for me. It works for a lot of people I know. I think I'm too obsessed with food. I think it makes me, when I can't eat, I get too, I don't think it's good mentally for me to focus. And it's the balance. It's everyone's different. And I think with food, it is so psychological about eating or overeating or what it does to us. You know, it's all laid down in childhood, I think, you know, about what food is. Is it comfort? Is it fuel? And I have friends who just see it as fuel. They don't really get a lot of pleasure. They're just quite happy to have it. And, you know, I wish I was like that. But I get so much pleasure from food. I love it. I love cooking for people. I love the ingredients. I like the tactile nature of it. I love the feel, the look, all of it.
Now, you've got restaurants in Japan, in Hawaii, in Korea. Do you change the menu? Do you sort of localize it wherever you are?
What we do, the hardest thing about a restaurant is, and I did it very young, is that you have to make it the same every day to make it good. Because customers, you want that familiarity. And the restaurant, which I realized, is not about me. It's not my restaurant. It's my customer's restaurant. And you're lucky that you have customers who want to make it their restaurant. So you can't change it. What opening restaurants in Japan, and I'd gone to Japan as an art student when I was 19 for about 4 months and fell in love with it. It really inspired the aesthetic, you know, the simple blonde wood, the minimalistic style of Bill's. And when I had the chance to do something there, it was fantastic because it enabled me to get a different set.
I had no idea at the time it wasn't pre-planned. Was
the, and try to understand. The Japanese palate really appreciates soft food. I always think my food is quite crunchy, but the breakfast dishes, the scrambled eggs and the ricotta hotcakes, very textural. They're very soft. And that's what really made them take off in Japan. The fact that the eggs are really creamy and like soft curds. And if you think of, you know, great sashimi that's really soft and textured, or Japanese rice, that very soft, light food. And I never had really thought about it, or wagyu beef, that fat content, that very smaller portions, a very unctuous, sumptuous food is a very Japanese way of enjoying food. And the scrambled eggs have got that, and the ricotta hotcakes. Yeah, which blew me away. It was a total fluke. And people fell in love with it.
Just tell me about making scrambled egg, because you've done that in a way that I mean, obviously I'm not a trained chef, and in fact I'm a very bad cook some of the time. But I would have put that into a really hot pan and it would have been bubbling up almost instantly, and yet you did it. It didn't. Tell me the right way to do it.
The right way to do it. And this came around because I was cooking and doing other things in the kitchen, getting the toast out of the toaster, doing things. So I put the eggs in the pan, not too hot because I didn't want to burn them, because I couldn't stir them constantly because I had to do other things. I was the only person making breakfast. So I just turned the heat to a medium heat. A little bit of butter because of the cream in there, and I don't use a lot of butter with cooking, so just the tiniest amount. And you leave it. The important thing is to let it set. So it's more like making a classical French omelette. You know, when you let the... when the bottom just catch and then you lift the bottom up. So it's that way of, you know, really just letting it gently set. It's like a custard where you want to almost let it catch a bit, set and firm, not brown, just slowly stir it. You need a good nonstick pan, that does help. I mean, a nonstick I try to avoid now for most cooking on high heat, but I think for this it's really great.
So back to being all over the world. And you were talking about Japan, but of course you're in Korea, you're in Hawaii. You're also here in London, but in London, you have to go under a different name.
Yes. Bill's is taken by another restaurant group. So we're called Granger & Co., which is fine, except when everyone thinks Bill's is mine. And they say, we went to your restaurant. I think any restaurant person is the same as this. When you hear someone being to your restaurant, you think, oh God, what's gone wrong? There's this fear of horror because it's never good enough. As a side, you know, and I think that's what keeps on driving you to a better job. You just never think it's good enough. And when they go to Bill's, it's like, it's not mine. I don't want to hear about it.
Now look at this. It's got shaved truffle on it. I'm going to sit here in the window. It's beautiful.
Shaved truffle shot with a jet. Or slice with a Japanese ginger grater, which I got as a gift.
Oh, wow.
I do love the gift-giving culture in Japan. I always get wonderful little kitchen tools.
This looks amazing. And luckily I can eat it with one hand and hold the microphone with the other hand.
Perfect. Yeah, isn't bread,
just so great. So we've got to talk about COVID, of course.
Oh, yes. Who would have thought? That's good.
I mean, here's this thing, it comes out of nowhere, and one of the main things it takes out is the hospitality industry.
I must say, at first it was shocking. You know, I think the restaurant's gone, you don't realise, it's that thing of work and identity, and I think for a lot of us, our identity, without even realising it, is tied up with what we do. And I suddenly realised, we closed the restaurant in Darlinghurst, and for the first time in 28 years, it didn't open on a Saturday. And it was wild, though, I think. And the panic. And the thing with restaurants, and I mentioned it earlier, is you work as... It's quite a family-based group. You know, it's very much about looking after people. So it's quite paternal, quite, you know, familial in that way. You know, the staff have to look after their customers, our customers who are regulars, and really embrace them. We have to look after the staff so they can do that. And we all look after our customers. And I think... what happened was the panic of not being able to, not knowing how we could do that, how we could pay wages. You know, we weren't serving people. And I think, you know, luckily in different parts of the world, in Japan and Australia and the UK, there was JobKeeper or furlough, which enabled us to keep our teams together. And it was fantastic. It was great help. And at the start, I think there was a fear, I thought of people going to want to go out again. But what is interesting through all of this, and we've had, you know, in Korea, we stayed open the whole way. There wasn't government support, so we needed to stay open to keep the teams together and pay everyone, was that things go up and down, but people's behaviour changes really quickly. After lockdown, the restaurants were packed in Sydney. Everyone drinking at lunch was like the, you know, partying like this. It felt like, you know, the roaring 20s, that idea of just like, there's no tomorrow, we're going to live for today. And, you know, now it's settled down. As you get a scare or a lockdown in Melbourne, you know, thing, it affects people. And instantly, even in the UK at the moment, you know, they're worried about outbreaks, so trade goes down. But all we're thinking of is just getting through, holding our teams together and working together. We're an edited business. You know, we've got less seats, less customers, less hours of operations in different countries. But I think it's not a bad thing. In the positive side, our restaurants are more local and we're really lucky. We've always had a local business, but it means we can really focus on that. And I think our customers have really appreciated in this uncertain time just to go out and see people and to be part of a community. I think all of us have realized how important that is. And you've just got to engage in it because, you know, people like myself who love traveling, like, you know, it's quite confronting. I can't move anywhere. I love London because you can go anywhere from here. And you've just got to accept to be in the moment. And I think, you know, there's good and bad and everyone's had a terrible time. But yeah, we've just got to get through 2020. Who would have thought?
Now, tell me about the book. One positive of lockdown.
One positive. Well, I wrote the book. I've been hassled to write. I haven't written a book for a long time. I found it very hard. I used to do a bit of TV and media. And it's quite hard to do everything. They're quite different things. Media is very much about you as a person. Or and you as an individual. Whereas restaurants are about a group of people. It's not about an individual. It's about the group. And I found it too hard to try and balance both. And swap those hats. So I really focused on the restaurants and just keeping that steady and looking after that. But my publisher called, who published Sydney Food, my first book, and said, look, it's been 20 years since you did Sydney Food. We'd love to do something with you. And I suddenly thought, oh. And the more I thought I'd really like to celebrate what I've done myself in the restaurants for the last 20 years since Sydney Food came out and the journey I've been on and the food I've been in. And I think recently, the world has woken up to the fact that food's great in Australia. And I think they've done that. And I certainly get phone calls because of Australian cafes that have popped up all around the world. And I think Australia's invented like the French bistro or the Irish pub, you know, whether we like it or not, people see us from the Australian cafe. And I think that casualness, the fact that you can go in, the friendliness, the friendly barista, the ease, the fun, and the freshness of the food is what people think of Australian food. So with this book, I tried to throw what I'm doing in. I mean, of course, I can't lay claim to all Australian food. I mean, it's so varied and there's so much of it. And, you know, who am I to say it? But I really wanted to, that's what I cook, Australian food.
Yeah.
You know, I am Australian. I'm go back to Australia and I'm blown away by how great it is every single time and how diverse and how much it changes. And the great thing about Australian food is, as I said before, it's constantly moving. It's taking influences from, you know, new arrivals because that's why, you know, Australian food is what it is.
Yeah. I love the way that at the beginning of every recipe, there's like a little personal recollection or something about the dish, often quite funny. Sorry, you've got a mouthful again.
I've got a mouthful of eggs. I thought I'd sneak one in. They're so good, aren't they? It's funny. I made so many eggs for so many years. I rarely eat them now. And when I have them, I thought, gee, they're good. It's like my first job at a restaurant when I was about 16, part-time, I made chocolates. I had to dip the petit fours. And the first day I had lots of chocolate. After that, couldn't look at them. Yes, it's always, I mean, food, I mean, it's not rocket science. The kids joked with me. I said, oh, look, they said I invented avocado toast. And one of the girls said, hey, Dad, you know, you didn't invent penicillin. It's okay, yeah, fair enough. So I think it is food, it is scrambled eggs. And all it is about having a bit of fun. And for me, food is about making customers happy. I'm not the kind of cook, and there's nothing wrong with it, who sees their own personal expression. I don't do that. I do food I know my customers will like. And I think of every customer because I think of my family or my friends or different sorts of people that I know, the staff members, their family, and try to make something that appeals to everyone. I'm not trying to exclude anyone, you know, whether it's with a wildly, you know, exotic ingredient or having to get people to ask what everything is. Which is a lot easier now with Google. But, you know, try not to intimidate people because I'm, you know, a kid from the suburbs of Melbourne and I remember going into those fancy restaurants or anywhere and I don't like, I think that old idea of exclusivity feels kind of dated.
Yeah.
I just don't know if we need to make people feel bad because they don't have the knowledge of food or they're not smart enough or they're not dressed properly or they don't feel. I mean, that feeling out of place, I think there's no place for that in hospitality and I don't, or for the hospitality I do. And I think that sort of trying to make things exclusive and, yeah, it's a really odd thing in the business of hospitality. It still happens, but I think, you know, it's just food.
So this food is divided up into various sections. Mm. So you've got a bakery section, a grain section, and so on.
Yeah, I try to divide it up in the menu sections we use in the restaurants. And over the years, we've gone from, you know, we've had breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you entree mains, and the way we eat so differently, and even breakfast grew. And so, you know, how do you put them into different things? And, you know, bakeries, you know, is baking the grains is, you know, a real response, I think, to the health movement that's happened. It's gone so much more, you know, the quinoa moment. That's the tongue around. And I've tried to think of the different way I like to cook. As I said, there's a lot less meat in it. There is meat in it and there's fish in it, but there's much more, a lot of vegetables, I think. I mean, I think that's the biggest difference. People ask the way I cook is different. And I think really it's just people like the same things. I think tastes don't change that much. I think people's palates are more adventurous in the morning now. In the early days, you know, I couldn't have done kimchi fried rice for breakfast, whereas now people love it. But, you know, the basic idea of comfort food's pretty much the same worldwide. You know, whether it's, I love Japanese comfort food, whether it's in oyakodon or, you know, katsudon or ramen or any of those things. And in Hawaii, you know, the kimchi fried rice is a classic dish, poke, all of those things. And I'm always interested in comfort food because it is that idea of making people comfortable and food they can eat every day.
And I must say that the recipes look really easy to follow and just things that you really want to eat. Bill, finally, I just need to ask you, what's next?
What's next? Well, with lockdown, we're just working on... It's quite interesting, whole lockdown. I think it's made me appreciate... I think all of us can be guilty of on the run and the cycle of having, you know, work and families and life and constantly running. And actually, I think for me, it's just enjoying what we have and doing a better job. It's a great moment to, as I said before, it's an edited business, but that means it's a time for creativity. And I started in 92 after the time of a huge recession. So part of me gets kind of excited by not knowing what's going to happen and what we're going to do. And what I might have to do that, you know, I might have to close all the restaurants and open up a little back alley somewhere in an old restaurant. You know, part of me, even during lockdown at the lowest moments, kind of excited by that. So I think now I don't know, which is kind of a great thing, not knowing that it's a bit more like I was when I was 22, that I didn't know. And I just did something from instinct and because it felt right and didn't worry too much about it. So hopefully now my kids are older, I can start to go on that big adventure again.
Fantastic. Bill, I'm going to let you eat your scrambled egg.
Fantastic. You're good, aren't
they? Very, very good. Bill Granger, many thanks. Australian Food is published by Murdoch Books and is out now. You've been listening to Meet the Writers. Thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer-Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.